Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When it comes to pensions, performance counts. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
I need your input into the next conversation because at first glance, wine mom culture may seem like a fun outlet for mothers seeking relief from parenting pressures. But does it mask a troubling reality is a question posed today. Experts warn that normalising alcohol as a kind of a coping mechanism exploits vulnerable women, increasing health risks and reinforcing unrealistic expectations of motherhood as well. Well, CEO of Alcohol Action Ireland, Dr. Sheena Gilheeny, is one of the experts warning us today. Dr. Sheena Gilheeny, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks very much, Cormac, for having me on.
You might explain wine mom culture to me, first of all. What is it?
Well, I suppose it's a reflection of an alcohol industry that's targeting women to increase the amount of alcohol that they're drinking. And we see it in lots of different ways. You see it in straightforward advertising. You see it in particular products that are being produced. There's lots of literally pinkifying of products. You see it in the packaging that's there. But when you come to, I suppose, the wine sort of thing, you see it a lot on social media. You see a connection between, oh, you've had a hard day, or the children kind of, you know, in your face. It's time to relax. It's time to have that drink. It's time to meet up with other people. You see it a lot in WhatsApp groups and memes, you know, that are kind of coming around. But all of that stems from an industry which is deliberately targeting women with very sophisticated marketing. And as I say, you see it in straightforward advertisements. You see it in sponsorship. You know, for example, women's rugby team being sponsored now by Diageo, by Guinness.
And it's kind of dropped into the conversation every now and again. There was a great opinion piece in the Irish Examiner yesterday, I think, by Melanie Murphy. And she mentions these things. Like, she says, "I'm the reason mummy drinks printed on a baby grow." And that's like the type of thing, is it, that you're talking about when you mention mom or wine mom? Because some people might say, why aren't we focusing on beer dads or wine dads? Is it down to marketing then?
It is. You know, I think if you look back, maybe say 20 years ago, the amount of alcohol that was consumed, about 2/3 of it was drunk by men, about 1/3 was drunk by women. And I think the industry simply looked at that and thought, oh my goodness, we've got there's an opening here in the market. So you saw the marketing techniques switch from, you know, women being used simply as an adjunct to get men to drink more, to a direct appeal to women for them to drink more. And some of that is conveyed, as I say, in the type of product, wine, spirits, been very much been marketed towards women in this way.
And what's the type of marketing message then?
It's a mixture of your identity. So sometimes those wine mom kind of things, it's about appealing to your identity, appealing to your femininity and, you know, where you are as a woman.
You're working really hard, and an awful lot of women work outside the home, and obviously they have their home duties as well. And they say, look, the message, am I right? Am I detecting it correctly that you've worked really hard today, you deserve a glass.
Yeah.
Is that it?
It is exactly, you know, where it would be. And it's about kind of like trying to recapture maybe a sense of youth, you know, so you're particularly in that kind of 35 to 40 year old age group. It's kind of like, you know, bring back where you were, you know, some time ago. And it's all about relaxing, that this is something that's essential to your relaxing. It's something you deserve to have. But what isn't conveyed in those advertisements, not surprisingly, is anything about the risk level that actually conveys.
What is the risk level?
Well, you know, to put it into context, you know, there's implications for liver disease. We've seen a large increase in the number of young women actually presenting for treatment for liver disease. There's implications for cancer. 1 in 8 breast cancers are alcohol related, you know, so that's and even a small amount of alcohol can increase that risk of getting breast cancer as a result of alcohol. And overwhelmingly, women's physiology is such that the same amount of alcohol drunk by a woman actually has a greater impact on their bodies compared with a man.
So I don't know why, but I'm uncomfortable with this conversation. And let me try and figure out why that is with you on the air here. I feel that some women might feel they're being vilified unfairly here. Like that men drink more, but that the women are being focused on here with a health message. Am I wrong in feeling that way?
I can understand where you're coming from on that. And I will say that firstly, men definitely drink more, and more of the harms that come from alcohol will be related to men. And certainly things like violence that would arise, you know, from alcohol use, you will tend to find that much more with men than with women. But I'm coming back to an industry that is very focused on women to get them to drink more, because it's about increasing their own bottom line. Now, we have legislation in this country that was passed in 2018, which was actually tried to regulate the content of alcohol advertisements, that was trying to strip out those myths, the kind of things that we're talking about here of empowerment and being seen as being essential or whatever. Mm-hmm. Legislation passed in 2018, and here we are 6 years on, no sign of it actually coming into play yet. And that was, these are minor sort of things. It was about trying to say, look, we recognise that the myths that are out there are encouraging people to drink in ways that are risky. And in this case, I'm talking about risks to women's health, but we could have a whole other programme talking about the risk to men's health.
Okay,
as well.
So let's talk about, in a way, the ingredients of this stew are very, very potent, aren't they? Because you have the marketing message, which is saying, look, you deserve, after the amount of work you've done today, you deserve a glass of something, mm-hmm. okay? Then you have the woman in this case who has worked very hard, without doubt. And maybe the feeling is, yes, I do deserve, yeah, on receiving that personal message. And then there's the other element of the insidious nature of alcohol, where the person who may be drinking a little bit too much doesn't want to hear the health message. And it's a potent combination, all of those, isn't it?
It is. And I think as well, again, the scale of the marketing that you see or absorb is huge in comparison to the health messaging that you might get alongside it. So, you know, the industry spends about of the order of 115 million euro annually on alcohol advertising. What you might see in terms of health messages, say from HSE, Ask About Alcohol, mm-hmm. would be of the order of 65,000 euro. So 115 million, 65,000, tiny in comparison. So you're overwhelmed by these sort of messages, which are comforting messages, which are telling you what you would like to hear, that you deserve to have it.
And if you don't want to hear them, if you have a nagging kind of worry that maybe I am drinking a bit too much, but this health message, I do not need it, I don't want it here at the moment, how do you get around that?
Well, I would genuinely say that what we need to be doing is massively reducing the amount of alcohol advertising, because that's what's pushing people, well, it's one of the things that's pushing people towards drinking more. And it's hard to hear or see the health messaging when you're getting all that happy, clappy, wine mom, you know, everything's well with the world, mm-hmm. so long as you have a glass in your hand. And you can have a nagging feeling underneath it all, but so long as you keep getting those alternative messages that it's grand, it's risk-free, you will continue to drink. It's not surprising.
And you say there's a creeping kind of normalisation here, is there, in terms of using alcohol as a coping mechanism, that's being normalised all the time?
It has. I mean, again, you look at things like you know, product placement on TV programmes. When you see women gather together, inevitably there's a bottle of wine will be opened as part of it, as opposed to we're having a cup of tea. You call around to somebody's house, you reflect that, then you open a bottle of wine as opposed to putting on the kettle for tea or coffee. And that has just changed. But it hasn't changed of its own accord. It's changed because that's the message that we're getting from the
marketing. There's a texter who says, what about when the neighbours organise a weekly wine night? Is that what you mean? Part of that kind of...
It's part of that. It's about saying that alcohol is everywhere. It's both there to celebrate occasions, but it's also there to mark the ordinary day as well. Mm. It doesn't have to be extraordinary. It's now seen as an ordinary product, but it's not an ordinary product. It's a carcinogen. It's a psychoactive substance, which can be addictive, which is addictive. Mm-hmm. And it adds...
Carcinogen, you mean it causes cancer.
Yeah.
Is that definitely linked? There's no question about that at all.
Absolutely not.
Because we know about coronary disease, don't we?
It is a contributor to coronary disease, to liver disease, to cancer. And it is a primary cause of cancer. It's not just, in some kind of convoluted way that it might be related to that. It actually is a carcinogen. It does cause
Why
cancer.
Why do some people then drink an awful lot for many, many years and they don't get cancer?
Well, because there's just different things that can come into play. You know, all you can ever look at is what are the statistics on this. Okay. But there are a number of routes towards alcohol causing cancer.
And I'm not questioning the veracity of what you're saying. I know there's it's a proven research link now between alcohol and cancer. But it's a question that some people, I suppose, will pose.
It's the same way that you might say, you know, your granddad smoked, you know, 20 a day and lived to be 100. But if you look at the average population,
it vastly increases the risk of it. So a listener text the program to 51551. How would you deal with this based on what we're discussing? From a mother of three who's in her mid-40s and absolutely deserves one with midterm.
I can understand why people would feel. I know the pressure that would, you know, come into play, and, you know, people that's there. I think what is needed is an overall campaign of letting people know the risks that are out there, of putting forward alternatives, that it isn't just about having a drink. It's about maybe doing other things that, you know, finding other ways that people can do things together that are relaxing. If you're getting together with friends, perhaps there's something else that can be shared. And I'm not even talking about another drink, another type of drink, but just a different type of activity that can lend itself, you know, to not waking up the next morning with either with a hangover or indeed a bit of a fear of what the implications for my health.
Joe says wine is an enormous problem for women. In the home, it's really bad at pandemic levels.
Well, again, we have seen a large increase in the amount of wine sales in this country. That's very apparent. Home drinking in particular is risky because of free pouring, if you like, that we tend to, you know, pour into very large wine glasses for a start off. So you're simply more likely to pour a very large glass.
Pub measure might be at home two or three.
Yes, really? it could easily be that. Well, what we call a standard drink in alcohol for wine is 100 millilitres. And really, if you were to look at that, you would say that looks more like an egg cup as opposed to...
Really?
Yeah.
So if you come to Cormac O'Hara's house, for example, I'm trying to show you that I'm actually a generous person. Yeah. Go on, Sheila, I'll give you an extra little bit. I'm actually causing you damage.
Yes.
The problem here is a very worthy, honourable conversation on the radio. But in playing out in people's homes, it might be different. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, World Health Organization look at this and say, well, what are the things that actually can help to reduce overall alcohol consumption? And they say it comes down to three basic things: controls on pricing, on marketing and on availability. And if you can put more of those controls in place, you will see a reduction in overall alcohol consumption.
I'd love people's reaction to this. CEO of Alcohol Action Ireland, Dr. Sheila Gilheeny, thank you very much indeed.